It's rough out there, you know, in the world. Some of us turn to writing for solace and inspiration. Text that helps us take in the dark and find the light. So if you are someone who wraps themselves in words to warm your heart, or maybe just looking for a little help getting through the day, week, year, join us as we talk to people about the pieces of writing they use to bolster their souls and remember their way. The good bones that remind us we can make this place beautiful. Hello, and welcome to the Finding Good Bones. Ooh, that'll stay in.
Hello, and
welcome to the Finding Good Bones podcast. It's not a Finding Good Bones, it's Finding Good Bones, a podcast where we talk about the pieces of writing that we love and that people love that help us sit with the dark, but still find the light. And I am your host, who is one of your hosts, Kate.
And I am your other host, Amy. Kate, what are you reading right now?
Oh, well, this will come in. I just reread Dune.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll, dear listener, understand why shortly.
Yeah.
Amy, what are you reading?
Well, our last guest, I'm assuming these are, I don't know what order we're going to release things, but our last guest, Lottie, brought let me find it. Fish Do Not Exist by Lulu Miller. Miller. And after he brought that, I bought it immediately. And I have not yet started it, but I'm going to say that's what I'm about to be reading.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. This can be like what we're currently reading, what we just read, what we're about to, what's on the...
Yeah.
The stack of 10 other books on our nightstand, or I guess for your like Kindle situation.
Yeah. That's the only way. Reading on Kindle is the only way I have room to walk in my apartment. Otherwise, books all the way.
I just constantly have bookshelves being built for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's a calculated marriage.
Yes. Okay, so I'm being quiet because here's what Kate did.
Oh, yeah. What?
Kate said, hey, let's record my episode. And I said, okay. And then Kate didn't tell me what she was going to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
And
I didn't realize I needed to.
So I didn't know. And then, Kate, what are you going to talk about? Don't read it yet. Just tell me.
Okay. I'm going to talk about The Litany Against Fear from Dune.
Okay. Do you want me to tell you what I know about it?
Do you want me to read it?
Okay, go ahead and read it. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead, and then we'll talk about it.
The Litany Against Fear by Frank Herbert, as read in the science fiction supreme masterpiece Dune. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain.
I like it.
Yeah. Me too. I love it. I absolutely love this snippet. And so this is a litany, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Amy.
Yes.
What do you know about it?
Okay, here's the thing. Kate didn't tell me because she assumed I knew, because I am a big fan of fantasy.
And sci-fi,
And sci-fi. And here's what I have not done, and that is read Dune. I have not ever read Dune.
I was shocked, dear listener. I was shocked.
Here's the thing. I tried to read Dune like when I was much, much younger, and I didn't have the ability to, even though I had read the fucking Silmarillion by Narrow, somehow I did
which
not
Which I find
have,
a much harder read than
I
Dune.
Know, it is, it is. Somehow I did not have the mental fortitude to finish reading Dune.
Okay.
So when Kate said, reading the Litany Against Fear, I was like, what? And she said, from Dune. And then she looked at me in a way that made me feel really stupid. And then I had to Google, and now I see it. And here's the thing. I've seen the recent movie, Dune.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember if they say this in there, but...
I
haven't seen it.
My confession, I have not seen... the only version of Dune... So I first read Dune when I was... certainly in middle school, I got my mom's copy, as so many sci-fi and fantasy books were like...
Mm-hmm.
It was in that weird space of... you know, being done with all of my Babysitter's Club and like classics, you know, that they get like Little Women, and I'd read all of the Anne of Green Gables. And then I was like, I've read all of those. Maybe I'll just start like on the sly picking up some of my mom's books. And so that's how I read like Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and Dune, and also a whole bunch of really, I think I've mentioned it before, inappropriate sexually books.
<Yeah.
laughs> Fantasy books by like Mercedes Lackey and Piers Anthony and Robert Jordan and all sorts.
Not particularly feminist books, I have to say.
Huh?
Not particularly feminist books.
Well, I don't know. You know, it gets tricky, right? I think that actually there are, so the Bene Gesserit, so this is a litany, right?
Okay, so I had heard Fear is the Mind Killer. I didn't know it was part of a thing. I just thought it was part of a litany.
Yeah.
Just thought it was a statement. Didn't even know it was from Dune. Everybody, please stay with us. I'm sorry.
No.
that I have done this.
No, you haven't done anything wrong. It's tricky, right? Like in the Dune world, and I am not, you know, Dune is a huge series. I've read the first six that were written by Frank. His son picked up, so I've read like from Dune to Chapter House Dune.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really read beyond that. And so there are people who are like experts in this stuff, and I will anger them if they listen to this, but maybe they won't.
Not as much as I've already pissed them off.
Yeah. They're like, oh, these two females talking about Dune. They don't know anything. You know, there is an organization in Dune, in the world of Dune, called the Bene Gesserit. And it's an order. It's an order, matriarchal. It's run by women, and they're very powerful, and they have, you know, powers. They have extreme control over their body, physically and mentally. And that's actually part of the litany against fear. That's where it plays in quite a bit. And then they've got this thing called the voice that I think about all the time when. Mm-hmm. My mom says something to me and then I have to do it, because it is like, it's a way of, it's a physical thing, right? But they can adapt their voice in a way that subconsciously forces somebody to do what they're saying. Now there are ways to like, you know, make yourself impervious to the voice, and it's capitalized, right?
Right.
And they can recognize it when somebody else is doing it. Like it's pretty fun. And then, They have incredible both like physical and mental control, and they're incredibly powerful. Right now, they are a matriarchal order in a patriarchal society. Mm. Dune is undoubtedly all like, it is the men in charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's written it in a way that actually, like it said, like the Bene Gesserit purposefully. They very much go, if you know that saying, like, the man is the head, but the woman is the neck that turns the man's head. I hate that.
Uh-huh.
But that is very much like in the, you know, one thing that I love about Dune is that, like many other books, you know, it's not fake footnotes. I do love fake footnotes, but like. Each chapter starts with a piece of there's a cat. Each chapter starts with a piece of text from something published, as if it were published a long time ago, right? A lot of it is Princess Irulan's. I will also say this as an apology for anybody who's a huge fan of Dune. As mentioned, I've I read it early, and I've read the first three like many times, and I came up with pronunciations on my own. And they don't necessarily match like the canon pronunciation, as I understand it. But Princess Irulan, who is, she becomes the wife of the main character, Paul Atreides, but not, she's not his lover, right? Like she is his politically assigned wife. And it's a whole big point, actually, that she will not be with him in any way, but she goes on to write his history. And so a lot of this, yeah, it's just really interesting the way that he's done it. But the Litany Against Fear is this, it's a litany. It is, you know, in theory, like a call and response piece of writing, or almost like a creed, right? It reads to me like a prayer. It's not entirely praying to something, right? But but rather to yourself. And there's a lot that I love in it. But, you know, I will say matriarchal order in a patriarchal society. So it is, and actually, like, with at least within the first four books, like, the main point of the Bene Gesserit has been, like, this breeding program to, like, produce this really amazing man. And so there's part of me that struggles with that, where I'm like, why? Okay, these are amazing and powerful women. So I wouldn't say that it's not a feminist book, right? Because he actually does a really, he fleshes out women in a really wonderful way, and they are flawed. One of the big flaws that they have, you know, so the Bene Gesserit, like, they have training schools, and there's this whole breeding program, and blah, 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 and they're very secretive, and there's this order, and they go to where they can see the power is, and they, like, infiltrate it, but the Bene Gesserit way is to be only loyal to the Bene Gesserit, right? They will have women in these particular places of power, or next to places of power, but they are ultimate, and they might appear to be loyal to, you know, their husband or whoever, but at the end of the day, they are loyal to the order. But this is Lady Jessica, who is the mother of Paul Atreides and the concubine of the Duke, and kind of all of the inciting actions. She was supposed to, as part of this breeding program, bear a daughter. But he really wanted a son. And so she was like, because that's the level of control that these women have of their bodies. They can decide the sex of their, they can decide if they want to get, it's kind of, actually, I honestly, I think that many legislators in certain states have read maybe Dune or like the Cliff Notes of Dune, and they're like, oh, that's how women do it. But yeah, no, the idea is that, they have such control over their body that they can decide whether or not they will be pregnant. And then they can also decide the sex of the child. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all interesting stuff, right?
Okay. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I have a question. Okay. I'm reading this, not knowing any of that. And I get a lot from it. Just on its own, I didn't know really where it was from, or I did because you told me, but I didn't know the where it was situated within New York. So is it important to you when you read it that this is a woman's litany?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. There are also, like, interesting, like, think pieces on it about how it is female and not male because of the idea of fear. And how it's kind of represented, the idea that fear is something caused by external things impacting the internal instead of something that they are, like, inflicting on the world. But yeah, I love it. Not just because, like, it is important to me that it is a litany created by, well, created by a man, but created by these women, right? who have power, right? However flawed, or however, it is still a patriarchal world, right? That they're living in. But they are formidable. And so I will say that it is always great for young girls to read about formidable women.
Yes. Okay. I'm looking at the actual words here.
They're amazing.
Yeah. They're amazing words. Okay. So the idea, fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. Okay. Mm-hmm. Took me. I'm just, you're talking and I'm listening, but I'm also reading this over and over.
That's the idea cool.
That even letting I can do both my multi. There's no such thing. Anyway, the idea that letting in even a little fear destroys everything. Is that how you read it?
No.
No? Okay.
No, it's just being, or I guess I read it as like not understanding that it's fear. Like, because if you notice, like, yeah, if you just take the first couple of lines, it very much sounds like don't have fear and don't be afraid. But actually, if you look at the meat of it, mm-hmm. I will face my fear and I will permit it to pass over me and through me, mm-hmm. right? That's mm-hmm. what I get into, and that's what I really love, is the idea that it's not about not having fear. It's about acknowledging that fear, yes. facing it, letting it in, and letting it move through you.
You mean acknowledging the dark and looking toward the light?
Shush, no, not okay. that.
Okay, the part where, okay, it pass over me and through me, that's a thing, you know, lots of people will say, mm-hmm. like, let it pass over you and through you. The part that goes pow for me is turning the inner eye to see its path.
Yeah.
That, what I did don't it, know.
When the fear went through me, what yeah. did I not need
yes.
that it took with it? And I yes. love that. For me, it's also the last line, only I will remain.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is only I. Oh, we're about to get a kiddo. It's fine.
That's okay.
Come on in.
Yes, we are. If you listen
we can, to... We can cut this out if we need to.
Okay.
Or we cannot. But there have been many times that I have actually, like, recited this
when you're myself. In a super hard time.
When I'm in a super hard time or when I'm having a lot of anxiety. This is certainly mm-hmm. something that I have, like, recited to myself countless times mm-hmm. In bed when so I you can't sleep.
It. You know the whole thing. You don't have to look. You know
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I did today because I didn't want to miss it. But mm-hmm. I didn't want to mess it up. But no, mm-hmm. it's a thing that I learned, right?
Okay.
Like I have learned it rote, and it is one that I will recite to help put myself to sleep if anxiety is keeping me up. It's also one time I was driving in Big Bend and mm-hmm. I was coming up from the hot springs and mm-hmm. like we'd stayed in the hot springs a little too long and it was like gorgeous, gorgeous twilight, mm-hmm. right? Like it was the golden hour, but that also made it really hard to see this little cliff that I was driving back up out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I was... with my friend Aaron, and we were in a rental car, and I knew that, you know, we wouldn't have died if I, like, it really was just, like, a car's width, right? And there, there was this, like, 40-foot drop-off. And it wasn't,
you wouldn't have died? It sounds like you would.
I didn't get the feeling that we would have died.
You were incorrect, but okay.
Yeah, maybe. Look, I was trying to drive, okay? But also I'm in this, but like certainly it would have been terrible, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. It would have been very, very bad. And so like I just started, like I was super tense and like I think she was trying to talk to me and I was finally just like, shh, like trying to drive. And I just started reciting it in my head and the way that it worked out is basically... As we were nearing, like, the part where we got back on the road and it wasn't a cliff anymore, it was, like, right at the end. And I'd been saying it quietly in my head. And then right as we're, like, driving out, I'm like, where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. And, like, Aaron hadn't heard me reciting this in my head because I'd just been gripping the steering wheel really tight and being quiet. And so, like, just as we're emerging... where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain.
I can imagine this so clearly.
Yeah, yeah. It happened. It happened.
Do you think it got? I know it got you through mentally. Did it get you out of there physically? Is that what?
I mean, I'm not there now.
Exactly. All right.
I'm not in a gorge in Big Bend, so yes, it definitely helped, and it's something that I come back to. The way that there are, you know, poems and sonnets and everything, mm-hmm. and honestly, prayers, right? But it feels like that, because it's not that I'm necessarily always capable of doing this, but it's what I attain to, right? It's. Mm-hmm. How I would like to be, if it's not necessarily how I always am, where it is, because, and that's what I love about it. If it were just the, I must not fear, fear is the mind killer, fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. Like if it were, and a lot of people love that part. And if it were mm-hmm. just that, it wouldn't really hold as much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you have to go through the whole process. You can't just stop.
Because that's not a process, right? Yeah. Like that's the idea that you, if you just leave it there, it's the idea that you build a wall, an impenetrable mm-hmm. wall. And that's not how it works. And that's also not how you grow, right? Or, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's growing or whether it's like leaving what you don't need behind. It is that last part, right, about facing fear. The fear is there. It's not pretending that it's not there. And I think that's mm-hmm. actually, if we want to get into it, the little death that brings total obliteration. Yeah. It's the not acknowledging the fear and the not understanding or examining the fear.
And what did you say at the beginning? I totally have forgotten now about this being a specifically woman's perspective litany because of the, was it because of it passing through? I don't remember what you said.
Exactly. Oh, no, it's the idea. It's a thing that I'd read a while ago just about the litany against fear. I'll see if I can find it for the show notes, but just a philosophical look at it. Mm-hmm. And the person who was saying, you know, that it is feminine in the sense that it is looking at fear as something outward.
Oh, okay.
An outward source that affects internally instead of being the like internal, like a very masculine idea of fear might be being the fear, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not that I can't be the fear.
You certainly can.
Yeah, yeah. All the time, actually. Sometimes, not all the time, just a couple of times, like when my daughter, because I don't want her to ever be in a position, I have no control over this, but like where somebody is like coercing her to do something about, you know, through the fear of hurting her mother, I'll just be like, and there's nobody scarier than mommy, is there? And she's like, no, there's not. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Because she'll do a thing, right, where she's like, the monster. And I'm like, well, let's talk to the monster. I'm going to send that monster to its room. Like, it's going to apologize to you for biting you. Because that's usually what the monster does. Oh. The monster has bitten her. And then the monster is going to apologize to you. And then the monster is going to go to its room and think about what it's done. And yeah. And then, yeah, sometimes it'll be followed. You know, if she's like, oh, no. Like, is anybody scarier than mommy? She's like, no. Like, yeah, remember
you know
that.
You know who you are in that. You are Susan Death right there.
Oh.
From the Terry Pratchett book.
Yeah.
Who literally
yeah.
does grab the monster and make him apologize.
Yes. Yeah, I love it. You know, where it's like, look, they have to exist by the same rules that we do. Mm-hmm. And so this is what you have to do when you hurt somebody. So this is what they have to do when they hurt you. That's kind of that's one thing that I'd read about this, the idea that this is, I wouldn't say like, I guess the idea of like feminine and masculine, right? And mm-hmm. these are not necessarily defined by gender or by sex, if you will, mm-hmm. but by like characteristics and attributes, and they all live in everybody.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Let me just throw that into our podcast real quick.
Yeah. No, what I'm thinking about is that in the background, and I don't know if it will show up on the audio, but in the background you can hear Kate's daughter who just got home. Is she talking to Alex?
Oh yeah, yeah. Look, if you can hear it, then I'm pretty sure the audience can hear it. And welcome to the integration of work and life.
Well, it's interesting that you were literally just talking about teaching her to tell the monster to fuck off.
Yeah.
And there she is in the background, letting us hear.
Asking for snacks.
Asking for that. Yes.
It's a piece that I love. And I'm honestly, like, that's the thing. I'm not bringing Dune today, right? Like, this is, it does have a place in that whole mythology and very lengthy series, but I don't necessarily go back to Dune itself the way that I go back to this small piece of it, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that was a podcast.
That was a podcast. We did it.
Yay. I said it this time.
Woo-hoo. You did. You did so good. Please write in and ask us for our recommendations on your personalized good bones.
All right, listen. Okay, Kate says a whole lot of it every time, so let me expand. You can go to our website and you can fill out a little form. And you can tell us a little bit about you or situations you're facing or things you're interested in. And we will find a personal recommendation, tell you all about it, and your life will be changed for the better. So we'll do that now. Findinggoodbones.com.
And thank you again to Drew Allen, our first only patron on Patreon. If you are interested in supporting the making of this podcast, then
join
you can,
Drew.
Yeah, join Drew.
In being as cool as Drew.
Yeah.
Who's pretty
as
cool.
Cool as Drew. Yeah.
And join us.
Yeah. And thank you, Amy. Thank you, dear listener. Thank you, me. And thank you, family. For your inadvertent contributions to this podcast. And thank you again, dear listener, and for joining us as we go finding good bones.